Hello and welcome to the Small Church Mentor Podcast, where we work to empower the pastors, leadership, and members of small churches to be what God wants them to be. Hi, I'm your host, Gary Fear, and I'm proud to serve you today. Today's topic, don't forget the family. We give all of ourselves to the church, and sometimes we come home with nothing left for the family, and be honest with you, that's quite the shame. Is anybody else stand there and after church service and grin patiently when somebody in the church is, and I tried to think of a better way to put this, but I really can't. Somebody else in the church is just being stupid. And just to get in the car and drive home and take all of that pent-up frustration out on the kids, or sometimes even the wife. And this isn't just bound to pastors. Leadership and even members of small churches, they struggle with this too. Let's face it, we become small families. And as small families, hard. You know, we can't be mean to one another. We're in God's house. We're Christians. I mean, after all, we can't be mean to one another. But we seem to let that down and let that go when it comes to the family and kind of take some things out on them. Speaking of the pastors, and you know, I guess it carries out to everybody, but a lot of the pastors in small churches are bivocational, a lot like myself, and we know all too well how precious time is. Of course, even full-time pastors of small churches are keenly aware of all of the resources, how precious all of the resources are. It often requires that us pastors function in roles that we weren't necessarily called to or maybe even aren't necessarily very good at. You know, there's things that we're called to do. I remember a time that my son, he was my youngest, he was just probably about 2 or 3 years old. He's got a buddy in the church and they're real close. They kind of play together and get in all sorts of trouble. You know, my wife walked in the nursery the other day and I guess they had pulled a chair. We have a padded upholstered chair in the nursery, and they pulled it to the middle of the room and they put a plastic stool on top of that chair. And my son's friend was holding the plastic chair and my son was standing on top of it. And what they were trying to do is they were trying to reach the ceiling fan to make it spin. So that's the kind of relationship these two youngins have. They're 4 now, but it was a couple years ago. And they were found in the bathroom together, in the restroom together, and just playing around. And it's one of those things, what are you guys doing in here? And they're like, nothing. You can almost visualize it. We noticed from that day, a couple months afterwards, from that day forward, that the toilet in that bathroom didn't flush. I kept going in there before and after service, and every once in a while I'd stop in and I'd try to plunger it. I even bought one of those 25-foot snakes from Menards and try to stick it down in there, and nothing worked. Finally, I had a couple hours free, and so I come to the church and I removed the toilet. It was during the day that my wife was having a food pantry delivery, and so there was a lot of people gathered around. The kids were running around, and they kept peeking in the bathroom to see what I was doing, and I found myself, I had the toilet off the floor and it was laying on the floor on its side, and I'm kneeling down in a puddle of water in front of this toilet with my arms wrapped around it, trying to find what in the world is plugging this stupid thing up. And for the life of me, I couldn't find it. But I remember kneeling there and thinking to myself, what do other churches do? What do other pastors do when this kind of stuff comes up? I mean, I probably could have hired a plumber, but resources are tight. And so what do others do? And we got to fix and put it back together. By the way, if you are curious, we have a lady in the church and she suffers a lot with dry mouth problems. And so she kept a cup, a little clear plastic cup on the sink, and it fit just perfectly so that I couldn't see it, but it was causing no end of trouble. in that toilet. And we got it fixed and we got it all back together. And it's a funny story now. But at the time, I felt like I let the church down because we had a bathroom that didn't work. You know, we have three bathrooms. I like the way the one comedian says it. We can name them First, Second, and Third John. But we had three bathrooms. And so it wasn't the end of the world, but I felt like I let the church down. And I always feel a lot of pressure to make sure everything's working and everything's functioning properly. And I don't know if that should be my place, if we should have a maintenance guy. I don't know all these things. And others in the church do pitch in. I'm not at all saying it all rests on me. But those type of things are always creeping up in the church. There's always some drama that needs to be tended to. There's always a malfunction in the building that needs to be tended to. There's always something to be open. And if you're not careful, you take your time away from the family to do those things. A little bit jump ahead of myself a little bit. And one of the cool things about that time with the toilet is most of the time when I did work on it, and even that very last day, my kids were involved. And so I had, now my oldest son, he was down working, but I had my other three and they got to see what a floor looked like without a toilet. And so it was a good teaching moment. It was a good time for them to be with us. By the way, in case you haven't figured it out yet, we do homeschool our children. So we have a lot of leeway in how much they get to be a part of our ministry and those things that we do. And that's very nice. But even if you don't homeschool, you have time to include them in that ministry. Again, I kind of jumped ahead of myself. And so I got to ask, what about the family? With so much going on in the church, and so much of your time, resources, energy, even money going to the church, sometimes you'll get feeling a little bit guilty if you put the family first. But one thing that we need to understand is that God holds the family in high regard. We see that in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4. It says that one desiring the office of a bishop must be one that ruleth his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. We gotta understand this one thing, that children are a reflection of their parents. Think about that next time you walk down a cereal aisle, right? Children are a reflection of the parents. I've heard it said that 55% of why people believe what you have to say is because of what they see. If that's true, then our children could undo every message we ever preach. Because the people see us through our children. But likewise, they can also confirm it also. We've heard the jokes and we've heard the laughter about PKs, right? Preacher's kids. They're all horrible. They're all bad. They're all the most wild kids in the church. And that's an absolute shame. But part of the reason for that is because we as pastors put more time on the church than our family. So if you're listening to this today and you're a member or a leadership of a church and you find that the pastor's kids are wild, it may be a good idea for you to encourage your pastor to spend more time with the kids. And one of the ways that that may happen is if you fix the toilet yourself. Maybe you don't have the gift, or maybe you do, or maybe you could pay the plumber to come and fix the toilet instead of expecting the pastor to get it done. We have one precious brother in the church, and one of the biggest, problems in my life was getting to the church and mowing the churchyard. I had done it since I was a teenager, and we hired it out for a short time, but it was basically to help a landscaping guy get started in his business more than anything else. But one thing I tried to do is mow that yard. And man, it was so hard for me to get here every week and mow the churchyard. And I struggled with it, and I fought with it. And so this precious brother one day, he didn't even say a word to me. I just drove by and the churchyard was mowed. I gave a general thanks behind the pulpit because I didn't know who did it. About the third time, I finally found out who did it. And he says, yeah, I'll do it from now on. And so I was thrilled. I was thrilled. Listen, we have to put the family first. And I speak a lot to children. You pastors' wives out there, and I talked to my wife, and she's accepted to be interviewed for one of our future podcasts, and I'm excited about that. But you pastors' wives out there, you need to get a hold of your husbands and remind them that the family comes first. But I speak a lot about the children right here because the children don't often have that voice. We don't often listen to them like we should. You know, God speaks against child sacrifice. We know that to be true. And none of us would ever put our child on a burning god called Molech and offer him or her, but we'll neglect them for the ministry. He doesn't expect us to sacrifice him literally. He doesn't expect us to sacrifice him spiritually or emotionally for the ministry either. We need to put the family first. Every time and all the time, we need to put the family first. But there's also a caveat to that. And I don't want to speak in circles, but at the same time, I want to encourage us pastors to quit using our children, our families, as an excuse why we're not performing as we ought to in the church. Maybe you don't do this ever, but sometimes they're a good scapegoat for me when somebody mentions something. I'm like, well, yeah, but we had some great family time last week. Maybe you don't use them as an excuse. We got to put them first, and we need to have that family time. But we also need to be careful about taking care of the things we need to take care of around the church. I wrote this down. I want to read it. We often put other things in front of our families, so when the church needs us, we don't have enough time for them. I love to do things around the house. I have about 3.5 acres, and we have some chickens. I try to keep a couple beehives and you know, different things. In the spring and into the summer, we'll raise some pigs. We get some sheep, and we bottle feed them. I love doing things like that. And I'm fortunate because we homeschool our kids, and so they're right there with me in all these endeavors that we're doing in the ministry at home. But if I'm not careful, I'm outside and I'm doing things outside, and I'm building and I'm fixing and I'm doing whatever outside. And then it's getting later in the night and I come in and now it's family time. Now it's family time. So I sit down for dinner with the family and the kids, can we play a game or can we do this or can we do that? And I'm like, well, we'll go ahead and do this tonight. And then I get a phone call and somebody needs something. Now I don't have family time. We need to arrange our priorities. I want to have some fun tonight. So we're going to spend some time as a family. And then from then on, I'm going to go outside. After we play these games, after we do whatever we need to do, I have our quiet time, have our bonding time, whatever we need to do, then I'll go outside. Stop using your family as an excuse. You sat in front of the TV all night long and you want to spend 10 minutes, a half an hour with the family and then go to bed. And you're so tired and wore out, you don't have time to study for the message Sunday morning. Put that TV aside. Give your family time. Give God time. Then if you have time after that, go ahead and enjoy whatever it is that brings value into your life. We need to be careful in using our children as examples behind the pulpit or in day-to-day life. Now, to be fair, I use everybody as an example. I love to bring everybody in the church into my message. And if I know something going on in a person's life, I constantly speak to them or speak of them. And I try to do it in a good way every once in a while. You know, we'll talk about some of the challenges and some of the battles that they're having. But we've got to be careful in using our children as an example. Tune into them and watch them. They'll let you know when they've had enough, when it's too much. And trust me, it's a wonderful thing when you could build them up instead of tear them down. We've got to be careful. Our families aren't whipping posts for us. And finally, one of the ways to stop from neglecting them is to include them in as much of your ministry as you can. We have our food pantry in the church, and that took up so much, and it does still take up so much of our time. We've been doing it now for, about 14 or 15 years. I know it's been about that because our oldest son is 15, and he was just a baby as we got started. I remember him laying on the floor while we were having pantry. Kind of made a little partition for him, and there was only a few people, and we watched him and took care of him. We weren't being neglectful parents. And then as he grew, we had a babysitter for a short time, and then he became the babysitter. We had we had the kids upstairs, and they were playing, and they were having fun, and he would watch over them, and every once in a while we'd peek our heads in and say, "Hey, is everything going on okay up here?" And then eventually he's down, and now he's unloading the trucks for us and with us, and he's carrying groceries out, bagging up groceries on pantry night. Now we have a daughter that's stepping into that arena. And our second daughter is babysitting the four-year-old. Again, when I say babysitting, we're all in the same building. She's watching them. And as they grow, they're a part. Even the music in the church. Our oldest son plays guitar. Our two daughters, they stand up and they sing with us in the choir. My son, he's preaching. I'm consistently talking to the children, talking to my children about the leadership of the church. I'm showing them things. I'm teaching them things. I even speak to them about them taking the ministry and the reins eventually someday. If God calls them and if God leads them and if God directs them, it's always that caveat, if God brings them there. God may bring them somewhere else, but I always, we're perpetuating God's ministry. And in doing so, I'm passing it on to the next generation. I'm teaching them. And if they don't use it here at our small area of influence, then I trust that they'll use it somewhere else. All my kids are involved in maintenance of the church. As a matter of fact, my four-year-old, we just had a birthday party last weekend, and we had it for the pastor, the original pastor of this church. He turned 90 in February, and so we were celebrating that, and we had a big PowerPoint with his a bunch of his old pictures, and we decorated the church basement, which meant that all the day-to-day function of the church basement got all moved into a small clothing room that we have. What a mess. It was fun though. And so I had to come Tuesday, and I cleaned all that out. And my four-year-old son came, and I set him up with some McDonald's on the table. I know that seems like it might be a little bit abusive that I feed my child McDonald's, but I fed him some McDonald's he's had at the table. And he'd come in there, and we had banana boxes stacked up in there, and he'd grab a banana box, carry it out, and stack it up with me. From the very youngest to the very oldest, they learn how to maintain the church. And when I come and work, the question isn't, when will you be home, as much as it's, which one of us are going with you? What are you going to be doing? They know how to clean in the church. What I'm saying is they're very much a part of this ministry. So what about the family? You can't neglect them. And I find the best way to work with them and to be with them isn't to neglect them. It's to include them. From your children to your wife, they have a part. Let them be a part. Bring them into the ministry and work with them. And please, please don't forget the family. I really hope that this was good, and I hope that it was beneficial. Email us at smallchurchmentor@gmail.com. Let us know some thoughts and some questions and some ideas you might have for this podcast. Visit us online at smallchurchmentor.com. And thank you for listening.